We hear a lot these days about how the STEM fields, that's science, technology, engineering, and math, are the future of education.
But our next guest says STEM is missing something, namely art and design, and by adding those subjects to STEM, it could create a new movement to transform the 21st century economy and solve some of the world's biggest problems.
We're joined now by Babette Alina, Director of Government Relations at the Rhode Island School of Design, that is home of the STEM to STEAM movement. Babette, welcome to Central Time.
Good afternoon.
I'd like to start out with a background on STEM, and I'm trying to think back, what, maybe 4, 5, 6 years, something like that, when the whole idea of STEM, this idea of learning about science and technology and engineering and math, really started to take off. Why was that?
Well, there were two main reasons. It was initially to engage students into a research workforce, essentially. So where does innovation come from? A lot of it comes from research and development and discovery. And the makeup of the population as we look to the future is more and more of an immigrant population. A lot of the populations that are currently underserved will be much less in the minority. And agencies like the National Science Foundation were looking at how do you develop that kind of human capital? How do we engage students in workforce and careers that will benefit them and the economy. And so it was really an access and engagement strategy initially for a particular kind of workforce.
And there was a feeling at the time that that kind of training, that kind of, training in science and what it is and how it ties in with technology, that it really wasn't readily available and that there needed to be a special focus.
Absolutely.
Now, as we've been down that road now for, like I say, 5, 6, 7 years, I'm not sure how long the STEM movement's been around, why all of a sudden a realization that we need to stick that A in there? Is this something that we've come from over the last couple of years, the experience that there's been something missing, or was it missing all along and we just didn't realize it?
I think that it's been missing all along, and many people did realize it. One thing that we're noticing over the last few years is that by putting, a brand on it, by calling it STEAM, it's something that people can come around. It provides an umbrella for a kind of thinking that has really never ceased to exist. We often talk about this unnatural bifurcation of the disciplines and how the arts and sciences have, sort of naturally been together in much of our history, and then only recently, say in the last maybe 50 to 100 years, have they sort of split apart. And people often point to the very obvious example of Leonardo da Vinci, scientist, artist. A lot of the way that artists and scientists work are similar. A lot of it, especially early on, relied on observation. If you think of naturalists, nature actually democratized how people had access to scientific information. And then I won't pretend to know the theory of why they separated, but what we're seeing is that we're growing a sort of a national movement around the idea of STEAM very rapidly because it has existed at the grassroots level under many names for a long time.
And so what might some of those names be that people might have heard?
Just very commonly, art-science collaboration is one of them. I believe MIT is the source of the publication. There was a publication called Leonardo that I believe is still in existence that documents this kind of collaborative work. There are federal agencies like NASA that provide artists in residency programs. The National Science Foundation has made investments over time that are, how do we improve education or how do you innovate STEM is one example of where we see it. It's really STEAM could be an answer to that, but it's not called out as such.
And I just want to clarify, are we talking K-12 education here, or is this beyond that?
Well, at RISD, we're interested in it in sort of three areas. One is in education, and for us, because we're a higher ed, it's K through 20. But the focus is certainly, in terms of grassroots, the focus is certainly on K through 12. At RISD, we're also very interested, and this is also, we've seen this in pockets all over the country, interested in how artists and designers collaborate with any of the STEM, so-called STEM disciplines, on research and discovery. So what does it look like if art is not necessarily in service to science and science is not necessarily in service to art as, just a subject matter? What happens when you put the mind of a scientist and an artist together to co-problem solve?
So what does happen?
Well, we're finding that I'll give you a good example. We met with a program officer at the National Science Foundation early on when we were advocating for STEAM or attention for this. And we learned that we were sort of singing to the choir. They said, we work with artists and designers all the time. The difficulty is, in terms of peer review, the credit is difficult if they don't hold a PhD. So there are certain gateways in terms of recognition for certain peer review publications. So this particular scientist shared that he had been working in an area where they had produced a massive amount of data, and they were trying to parse through it and try to visualize exactly what they had found or whether they had found anything. And he had a colleague, I think it was a personal relationship, it was an artist, a fine artist, who came in on the team and literally saw what the other artists, what the other scientists were missing. And the discovery was really a result of that collaboration of an artist just looking at something visually and seeing something different. And the story he told me was that, unfortunately, when the results were published in a peer review publication, the artist was not credited as a PI because they didn't hold the credentials.
And here you've got an example of an outside person coming in, an artist coming into the scientific setting. But it sounds like what we're trying to do is take those various people and put them together, put that training together, so that one person has those skills to come to that same conclusion by themselves.
Right. And we're not advocating that people should know everything. Certainly, there's a benefit to having depth in your area, but it's also, we're seeing that it's beneficial to be able to speak some of the language of your collaborators. So the idea of, I think it's been spoken of as the T-shaped person. Unfortunately, I'm not sure who to credit for that, but it's definitely not me. The idea being that you have depth in one area and you have some breadth in multiple areas, which makes it sort of ideal for collaboration. So you have a scientist with depth in whatever their research focus is, and you have an artist coming in with whatever their interests are. And then together, because of their distinct expertise, they're able to come up with something different. There's also a lot of belief about sort of innovation and research happening at the periphery where disciplines intersect. So irregardless of whether we're advocating for art and science specifically, typically if you work at this sort of edge, new ideas are generated, and they have some evidence of that. And then I wanted to go back to your earlier question that the other thing that we're very interested in where we're seeing this play out, the idea of STEAM, is in terms of encouraging employers to hire artists and designers in settings where you might not imagine them working. And RISD has actually secured funding to put our students in policy settings or NGOs over the summer. This is our second round. It's funded by the Maharam family. And they have worked in places like the Mayo Clinic and were brought in to, say, solve this particular problem. They came in and say, actually, that isn't your problem. Let me talk about this other thing that I'm noticing. And ended up solving something that really was, you know, the issue, but wasn't what was presented to them.
And I have to ask, from a practical standpoint, when you go into a place like, say, the Mayo Clinic, and you've got somebody from the outside with this artistic viewpoint, how is that received? I mean, do you get some pushback?
There's a little suspicion. For this particular program, it's entirely student-driven, so they have to develop a relationship with the host, and they develop the project together with the host. So this particular student approached the Mayo Clinic, I believe through a RISD connection, developed a project, understood what she was walking in to solve, and then, so she was accepted. They knew they were taking in a design student at that point. And then in terms of how receptive they were to her solution, they were incredibly receptive and ran with it, and I believe offered her a job.
Let's talk a little bit about what STEAM might look like in the classroom. And, you know, in Wisconsin, as I imagine around the rest of the country, there's a big discussion right now in K-12 circles, primarily on Common Core standards, for example. How does something like STEAM fit in with a paradigm like that? Is it possible to do?
I love that question. So I've learned recently, because I do not have depth in K-12 education, but I'm skimming the surface, that there are core standards for art education. Unfortunately, in a lot of school districts, you know, as you know, arts and sports are the first things to get cut, so there's not a lot of investment.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on what district you're in and in what region and in what state and so on and so forth. But there are standards for art education, as there are standards for math and reading and so on and so forth. So what we're seeing is that art teachers and, say, a math teacher are interested in this idea because ultimately they just want to get students interested in education. And with that goal in mind, teachers are really innovative people. Think about, you know, the kind of person that chooses that profession. And we're seeing that they're finding each other and saying, how can we deliver what you need to deliver as an art teacher? So, you know, color theory, shape, understandings of geometry, and how do we take that and combine it with what we need to deliver, say, in geometry, and put something together that's maybe project-based or experiential or happens outside of the classroom or what have you, so that you're developing competencies, student competencies, in areas with depth, but you're also allowing this place to play.
So we've only got a minute left before the next break, and I want to talk about money a little bit, although I hate to do it.
That's okay.
You know, we're talking about putting something different into a curriculum at a time when there seems to be no money for this, whether you're talking K-12, universities are being stretched. How do you convince people that this is something worth spending money on? And we're going to have to keep it short, and we'll pick it up after the news.
Well, I would love to pick up that topic. I can say that it requires a very minimal investment. If you're working off what exists in core standards, the curriculum is prescribed to a certain extent. What teachers are calling for that are interested in promoting STEAM or practicing STEAM is to just have the planning time to work with their colleagues. And very often we're seeing that effective programs are when they have a dedicated person to actually coordinate the teachers from multiple disciplines.
Okay, let's hold it right there, but we will pick it up after the news and talk about that funding aspect. We're talking with Babette Alina about turning STEM into STEAM, and we'd like to hear from you. Do you see a value in incorporating art and design into the fields of science, technology, math, and engineering? Give us a call at 800-642-1234, and you can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're talking about the intersection of art and science and education with Babette Alina this hour, and you can join in the conversation. 800-642-1234. How do you think art and design should be a part of science, technology, engineering, and math? And if you're a scientist or an artist, how do you see the value in the other's work? Give us a call. We've got some open lines for you at 800-642-1234. You can also send us an email. That address is talk@wpr.org. Babette Alina, before the break, we were talking about that sticky issue of money, and it was a big question. You didn't have time to answer it all, but you were talking and starting out the idea of people taking the time to be able to plan things out and have that ability to kind of look at the bigger picture.
Yes, and I would also like to add to that, so we get a lot of teachers calling us and asking, you know, how can I do this, or do you have a curriculum in a bottle, or who is in my region that's doing this, what are the best practices, and we do a lot here to facilitate those kinds of interactions, but I'm hearing that it's time, it requires you to have an art teacher in your school, so that's a financial consideration. Some schools that don't have that ability will reach out into their community. So a lot of them have relationships with, say, a local arts organization where they can bring people in. They've sustained those relationships over time, and I've learned that they are very happy with them. It's not quite the same thing as having a dedicated person in your school, but people are doing what they can. So I think the first consideration is, you know, does the school district have sufficient funds to pay for the artist or designer to create STEAM? And then assuming that they do, or once they do, then the investment is fairly minimal. It's, you know, supplies, if it's a learning module that happens outside of the classroom, it's, you know, the bus to take them to the museum or to the aquarium. It's the supplies that they use in the classroom. It's the planning time for the teachers. And I can't put a dollar amount on that, but I know that it's significant. And the programs that are developing the fastest also have sort of a head teacher or an administrator that coordinates and supports the effort.
Let me ask you, we do have some calls. We're going to get to those in a second. In this day and age, though, there are all sorts of efforts at reforming or changing or modifying educational curriculum and methods and so forth. How does STEAM fit within that, and is it getting lost in some of that noise?
Interestingly, it's not getting lost. We're seeing more and more examples just from the outreach to, say, you know, RISD or my office alone, It's happening all over the country in every way you can imagine. And interestingly, it's almost exclusively at the teacher level. So there's a real authenticity to the movement because it's people who have experience with engaging students and understanding what engages students, and they are grabbing onto this and holding on and figuring out ways to do it. And they're all different, as I said, different flavors. So one example, and I will promote this because it's a RISD alum, but there's something called the Institute of Play and Mission Lab in Manhattan. It's a public school. And what they do is they use games and the idea of play to engage students in STEM. And they're very successful. So that's one example. There's a series of schools called A-plus schools. You may have heard of them. They're around since, I think, 1998. So that's been around for quite a while. They fully buy into the idea of STEAM, but they don't call it that. So they have a very unique curriculum they've developed, and they have four schools that follow that model. There are a lot of schools that are using technology to sort of follow the idea of STEAM. So there are schools called High Tech High. They're in California. I think there are five of them now, where they're just using technologies to engage students. It's similar to the Institute of Play. And going back to your funding question, that's another thing that the schools are asking for. They really view technology as the bridge, and they need more of it. They want more of it.
Let's go to the phones right now. By the way, if you would like to join in and give us your two cents on the intersection of art as it relates to science, technology, engineering, and math, we'd love to hear from you at 800-642-1234. How is this being incorporated into curriculums in Wisconsin, perhaps, either in the K-12 schools or university level, technical college level? Let's go to Greg now, and Greg is with us from Milwaukee. Hi, Greg.
Well, hi. I think art is one of the most important subjects there is in school. I've taken biochemistry, clinical lab, health, physics, all sorts of things. I'm an HVAC. I'm 60, and I'm still in school at MATC. But I believe that art, how do you express yourself? You come up with an idea, how do you express yourself if you don't have any art? I mean, if you don't know how to put your ideas down on a piece of paper, you have to take communication skills, English and things like that, but you also have to take art because art is such a big part of communication. If you can't show your idea, how can you go anywhere? You're stuck. So that's just my idea, and that's all. I'll take my comments, your comments out the air, okay?
Greg, thanks so much for the call. And what do you think about that idea that how, expressing yourself, even in someone in a scientific field, is a key part of how art can help make you into, I guess, more of a better-rounded engineer? Babette?
Oh, it's a question to me. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
Well, I have a very short answer to that. We have a dual degree program between RISD and Brown University that started in the engineering school at Brown and the industrial design program at RISD, and that's now spread across the institutions. And one thing we've learned is engineers need to know how to draw.
Just for the simple fact that they're thinking about ideas, things they need to build, whatever, or design something. And the simple fact is that you can't necessarily do that on a computer or express it in some other way.
Exactly. And you can eventually do most of it on a computer, but we're finding, at least with RISD and Brown students, and I should speak mostly for RISD students, that understanding of working with the materials, it gives you a different insight. It's a tactile experience. It's a more direct connection between brain and process than going through the technology, which is different than what I was saying about technology being the bridge between the disciplines. That's
right.
A different idea.
Interesting. Let's go to Madison right now, and Diane joins us. Hi, Diane.
Hi, good afternoon to the two of you. I love STEAM, and I'll tell you why. Because to me, it overrides a binary opposition between left and right, between scientific and artistic. And I think it works with how the human brain works and probably relates to most of human history, not history in the literary sense, but in the evolutionary sense. What do you think of that?
That's a great question. Babette, what do you think about that?
Well, that's a slightly more complicated answer than the last one I gave, but I am currently working as an artist with a neuroscientist who has explained to me that it's just not that simple. So we have been approaching this as right brain, left brain, and there's a wonderful program that I'll also call out in Oregon called the Right Brain Initiative, and they work with a local elementary school on STEAM curriculum, and they are also very successful at this. evidently it is not just as simple as left brain, right brain. There's a lot of stuff in between, and one is not necessarily delegated to one hemisphere of the brain or another. So that is my rudimentary understanding of the physiology of the brain. But in terms of how do you put the two, you know, strengths together, that is the whole premise. I fully agree with you, Diane. It is the premise of the STEAM movement to be able to say these disciplines are stronger together than apart.
In about a minute, minute and a half that we've got remaining, we've been focusing a lot on sort of the K-12 aspect of things, but what about a student who winds up in a technical college or a university setting and they haven't had this sort of background? How do you fit that in to the curriculum at that point? Is it too late for them, or is there still a way to make it happen?
Well, a lot of the work that happens in technical schools is work with the hands, if you think about it. You know, if you think about shop, which gives a real understanding of material. So it's not, those students are probably closer to understanding the principles of art and design than most other students that aren't in technical school, because they're having to deal with those things. So if they're not actually drawing to understand some of the things they're learning, they are definitely fitting things together.
And what about the idea of lifelong learning? You're out of school and you still want to pick some of this up. Is it, you know, you're a craftsperson and you could pick some of it up, I sort of think, by osmosis, but are there other ways that you could do it?
We have a very strong continuing education program at RISD, and not just to promote ours. There are wonderful continuing education programs all over the country, and there are also a lot of sort of higher ed programs that are developing. I'm aware of two at Harvard. I think they've just developed a PhD program or a master's in education program. It's a one-year program. So for someone like me to go back to school and say, you know, I really would like some depth on education, I think you can do that. You can do it somewhat in an art and design school, although I have to say that it's so hands-on that it really does take the time. So continuing education programs are a great outlet. But not to answer your question directly, but it brings up a point that I'd really like to make, which is that art and design teach critical making. So in other words, this understanding of, you know, how things are put together and how things are made. And it also teaches critical thinking, because you have to be able to imagine. And what we're finding is that those skills are transferable, meaning so if you're looking at not necessarily workers that are having to retrain, but the future workforce, we are dealing with jobs that will change so rapidly we can't even imagine what our children will be doing 20 years from now.
And Babette, we're going to have to leave it there. Thanks so much.
These skills transfer. So thank you so much.
You bet. Babette Alina is the Director of Government Relations at the Rhode Island School of Design, home of the STEM to STEAM movement.